Thanks for that reminder, Jim. Okay. Whoops, I've lost everybody on my screen. Sorry. Hey, family. Alcoholic addict. My problem is Marcia. I would like to thank thanks, Jen, for inviting me to be here. I think I'm not really quite sure. I'm still trying to figure that one out. And I know that you've been trying to get me to do this for a while. And I've done a great job of avoiding. I love to avoid things. But I'm here now. And I'd also like to thank Jim for waking me up from a dead sleep, which is what I was in. Another way of avoiding things is my body's learned how to just sleep, and I didn't sleep very well last night, and I've been watching the clock all morning. Took the dogs for a walk, set my alarm, all of that stuff, so that I had to be here to do this, and yeah, I fell into a dead sleep. So thank you, Jim, for calling and waking me up and getting me moving. Because I would have loved nothing other than messing this up somehow, you know, forgetting about being here or saying at the last minute, yeah, I don't want to be here. Absolutely don't want to be here. So, but I guess all things for a reason, and I can't believe I just said that because being in traditional meetings, they used to say that to me all the time. Everything happens for a reason, but they usually tended to include the God word in there somehow, you know, just like it says in the big book. And I used to want to break people's kneecaps when I used to hear things like that. And everything happens for, I don't understand. What do you mean everything happens for a reason? That's pretty screwed up. So, all right, I need to be where my feet are. I do feel a little scattered and a little lost right now. So, okay, let's start from the beginning again. Hey, family, alcoholic addict problems, Marcia. My sobriety date is June the 16th of 2017. That's when I finally decided maybe I was going to give this thing a chance. So that would be just slightly over 7 years ago. And I really am surprised that I am still here. I'm surprised that I'm still doing this recovery thing. Because the last thing I wanted was to actually get sober and to be part of this recovery world, you know. And it was a few things that finally brought me to that point of hitting that bottom, you know. I really honestly believe that we all hit the same bottom. How we get to that bottom, that's what differs in all of us, and what we do once we hit that bottom is also what differs in all of us. And I see that bottom is that place where we, where I finally said, okay, I can't do this anymore. You know, the pain was just way too much. The consequences were way too much. Waking up every day was way too much. And I didn't want to do that anymore. So I actually spent this morning actually listening to one of the recordings that I've done. Zoe, hi. Sorry. I get distracted so easy. Squirrel. I spent this morning listening to one of the previous recordings that I had done here for Tusnua, and it was in February of 2021. And so, and now we are in, you know, August of 2024. And in the past 3 years, like I was listening to myself and I went, wow, who the hell is that individual? Because in 2021, I was in a lot different place than I am right now. And, you know, considering it was, you know, the middle of the pandemic, you know, some people were losing their lives. You know, some people were losing their jobs. People were going insane through isolation and this, that, and whatever. I think that I was at the high point of my sobriety, of everything that was going on with me, you know. I had a job that, well, I liked the path, the career that I put myself on, but at that time I liked the job that I had and the people that I worked for. I was new to Tosnua, and I was getting to know people, and things were really exciting. You know, financially I was doing okay, emotionally I was doing okay, all of those things. I had this amazing toolbox of things that I could do when things started to go absolutely insane, as I like to say, when the zombie apocalypse is coming, or when this hummingbird on Red Bull needed to release the energy and all that stuff. You know, things were going well for me at that point, because right now, right here, right now, like I might be having a good moment right now, but my life sucks. It absolutely sucks. I'm on leave from work. I had a severe mental breakdown with a lot of the things that are going on with work. The organization turned out to be the devil incarnate, that has severely has no support and no interest in the people that work for them, for their employees. I took some time off work, a decision that I made because I thought it was the best thing, you know, before I go insane or whatever it is. Let me take care of me so that I can, you know, take care of things around me. And I feel like it was the worst decision I ever made, because it screwed my me and my family up financially. You know, my mom's retired and on a fixed income, and my stepdad, well, you know, he's 100, and things went downhill so fast. I had a couple sponsees that I cherished more than anything else in this world, and I still do. But because of everything that was going on with me, I became unavailable, like severely unavailable, like to them. And you know, I still don't really know how things are going in regards to my relationship with one of them at this point. I had this amazing tribe of people that called me on my shit, and I was able to call them on their shit, and they loved me and I loved them, and called each other and you know, talked about everything, and I didn't call a single solitary soul. And I convinced myself that this tribe of people were doing nothing but annoying the shit out of me, and I wanted to have nothing to do with any of them. And you know, and that's how things were going for me. The past 6 months have been complete, utter, and pure hell. And a little while ago, I actually had that thought of, why am I alive? You know, why am I here? And I felt exactly the way that I did in 2017, when I made that decision to stop drinking and stop using. You know, that's how much pain I've been in lately, and it fucking sucks. It absolutely sucks. And I've been asking myself, you know, did I go through all this recovery stuff just to be sitting here where I am right now, you know, crying every day, not being able to see the positive of anything at all. You know, and what is my conclusion to all of this is, everything happens for a reason. Which is what I cannot stand that phrase and everything like that, but I'm still here, you know. I know that recovery is not about everything being perfect. I know that recovery is not about getting what I want. It's not about being able to manipulate the outcome of things. Recovery is about not drinking. Recovery is about not using. For me, being an alcoholic and an addict, it's about not drinking, it's about not using, not substituting one addiction for another, but it's about getting to know who I am again. It's about fixing whatever was broken inside of me. And I don't know if I was ever broken. Maybe I was just off kilter a bit. Who's to say? But there was something inside of me that needed to be fixed and needed to be repaired, needed to be healed, needed to be looked at, needed to be turned on. I don't know. I don't know. But part of the reason that I was a hardcore drinker, sorry, part of the reason that I was so hardcore with my drinking and my drugging was that I don't like reality. I can't process reality. I don't want to be in reality, and I always felt like there was something missing. And the drugs and the alcohol were amazing with fixing that for the fraction of a second that it did. And when the drugs and alcohol were taken away from me, I had to find out. I had to find something. I had to that there, I just needed something. And that's when I substituted all the other things that were out there. And what I was told when I came into the program, I came in on fear and hormones, going after this woman that wanted me. She definitely wanted me, because at that point I was 87 pounds soaking wet. My teeth were yellow. My eyes were yellow. My skin was gray. I looked disgusting. I smelt even worse and all that stuff. But yeah, she wanted me. Everybody wanted me. That's the way I thought. Okay. And the fact that she was straight and she was in a committed relationship, and I was a client, and there's, clear boundaries of all these things, professional boundaries. The fact that all of those things were there, yes, yeah, she wanted me. This woman became one of the pillars of my recovery. And she said to me, "I'm going to help you realize that everything you need and want in your life, you already have it. It's already there inside of you. You just have no idea that it's there." And I thought, what a crock of horse crap are you talking about? What is this shit that's coming out your mouth? And she was right. She was absolutely right. Everything that I need, everything that I want is right here. And it's covered by this skin. And the skin is what I was so uncomfortable in for the longest time and what I wanted to escape. I found out that, my body can't process alcohol. My mind cannot process reality, and anything that I can do to get out of that is what I'm going to do. So, I'm hoping by the time I'm finished yapping here with all of you, I will remember this journey of recovery that I've gone on and the things that I've gone through. And some of them have been amazing and some of them have been awful and all of that. But I'm hoping that by the time I'm finished here with you all, that I will have the strength and motivation to keep going. And when I say keep going, I mean like keep going with my recovery. I'm not talking about, the keep going with my life. So I don't want anybody here calling any sort of authorities on me, thinking that I'm going to off myself, because I'm not. What I'm looking for is that motivation to keep on going within my recovery. And I was told, don't drink. If you don't drink, you won't get drunk. All right. And I became part of the No Matter What Club. No matter what happens, do not pick up that drink. Even if your ass falls off, if your ass is on fire. And I'm thinking, what a stupid phrase is that? Even if your ass falls off, what the fuck? Just, whatever happens, just don't don't take a drink. There's nothing in this world that I can't get through that a drink is going to help. Oh, sure. There's nothing in this world that I'm going to go through that having a drink is going to make any better. So, yeah. So, when I think about how things got started for me, my first addiction, the first thing that I was truly addicted to was attention. And I convinced myself that I didn't get enough of it when I was growing up. Because my mother abandoned me. Oh, woe is me that that woman could abandon me and leave me as a child. And the whole part of my early childhood was without her. That's that woman that lives upstairs in this house, my mother. And that's where everything started. You know, if I would have gotten everything that I needed and wanted from that woman, then things would have been a lot better, right? So, you know, I was born in Jamaica, you know, 19 to picture it, Jamaica, 1971. A child is born into this world. And this woman that abandoned me. So what happened was the woman that abandoned me, my mom, what she actually did was she got on a plane. She probably made one of the hardest decisions she's ever had to make in her life. And she left her two children, me being two and my brother was seven. And she left us so she could, with my grandmother, who she really is the root of all evil, my grandmother. But she left my brother and I. So she could come to Canada and make a new life for us. You know, how dare she? How dare she do that? You know, because all I saw was her walking away. And when she brought my brother and I up here to Canada, she had to work a lot to keep our heads above water, which, you know, she was a nurse during the night, and she was a nanny housekeeper during the day. I don't know when that woman slept. I have no clue because, you know, for the longest time, all I can ever remember is seeing my mom coming in, taking a shower, asking us if we're okay, and leaving, you know, for the longest time, all through school. And, you know, I need to say that I love that woman. Okay. I love that woman with all of my heart, and I would do anything for her. Excuse me, getting a bit choked up here. Only because all the stuff that I'm going through right now with me not being at work is affecting her so badly. But I would do anything for her. I would do absolutely anything for her. And if I could have just the slightest bit of integrity that that woman has, I would leave this world a very happy person. Okay. Because she's awesome. She's never, ever turned her back on me with anything that has gone through. And I can tell you at the high point of my journey until I found recovery, she almost lost this house that we're living in because I found her checkbook and I started writing checks. And it was the account that goes with the house. And I started writing checks like you would not believe. And I thought I was in seventh heaven when it came to my drug addiction. And I could buy, oh my God, it's insane what I went through. But and I learned how to intercept the mail. You know, the only bills that the only mail that my mother was getting was all the other things, all the other bills and everything. But she wasn't getting anything but anything that had to do with the house. And one day, these two people showed up at the house, in their police uniforms, and I thought, but my past is catching up to me again. And they were here to foreclose on the house, and they were here to change the locks. And we had, you know, this much time to get out of the house. That's how much money I had spent. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how much money that is? The fact that I was able to hold off the mortgage company and the banks and all that stuff for so long amazes me. And The look on my mother's face when it was being explained to her what was going on, and she was just staring at me. And you know, I actually had the audacity to say, "Mom, you know, why didn't you tell us you were going through some financial issues? Why didn't you tell us what was happening and what was going on so that we could have helped you?" When I say we, I mean me and my brother and my two sisters, who were just starting to get into the work field at the time, you know. How could you do that? You know, and now look, all of us are going to be on the street because you had too much pride within yourself to tell your kids that you were going through a hard time. And yeah, I actually had the audacity to blame her for what was happening in that moment. And even through all of that, right, I was invited back to be living in this house when I finally got picked up out of the gutter. I was brought into this house. Actually, no, first my mother hosed me down in the driveway because I smelled so bad and things were so bad that there was no way she was going to let me in the house like that. She hosed me out down in the driveway. And I came in and I took a shower, and I felt the water burning my skin, 'cause I don't know when the last time was that I'd taken a hot shower. And I watched that dirt go down the drain and all of that stuff. And I got out of there, and my mother had laid out some clothes for me. And in amongst that clothes was underwear in a package, you know, 7 pairs of underwear all in a nice little package. And I put on clean underwear probably for the first time in 5 years. And that was a turning point for me, you know. Even through all the hell and bullshit that I put that woman through, I disappeared for 10 years. She did not know if I was dead or alive. And today I have the honor of living in this house with her. I'm helping out with a lot of the bills while when I'm working and I have income coming in. And I'm able to be with her emotionally, and I share things with her, and she shares things with me. And, you know, for the first time, I can say that, you know, I have a mom who's pretty awesome, you know. And, you know, things are good with us when I can call her a mom instead of that woman that lives upstairs. When I call her the woman that lives upstairs, that means that I have an issue going on with her. And that's just my way of dealing with it. So, you know, and if it weren't for this process of recovery, if it weren't for the steps, if it weren't for, you know, the people that I have in my life, I wouldn't be sitting here like this in front of you right now complaining about how bad my life is and woe is me, you know. But the truth of the matter is that I have a life. I have a life. No matter what it consists of right now, I have a life that is free of addiction, at least the drug and alcohol part of it. I do have a lot of other things that I'm addicted to. Fried chicken. If y'all ever tasted my fried chicken, my mom's fried chicken, you'd understand that too. You'd get hooked on it for, and excuse me to all the vegetarians and vegans out there, but oh, it's delicious. I could get addicted to anything or hooked on anything. So, all right. So that's part of my recovery journey, is you know, once I got off the streets and stuff like that, and realized that that's not where I wanted to be anymore. I got to be here, and you know, I'm not going to get into what it was like, but I was a hardcore down and out dirty drinking, drugging person, and looking through, hanging out at the bars, looking through the recycle bins at the end of the night. You know, the bartenders throw out the bottles and whatever, and I'd go through the bins collecting all the bottles and pouring out that one little tiny drip of alcohol that was left in it. Pour it into a water bottle that I had, you know, just mix it all up wherever I could go. And I'd walk up and down the areas that had all the bars on them, and that's what I do. I was an IV cocaine user, and I was a dirty user. And like, I didn't hang out with other people when I was using, because I haven't forbid that anybody would ever have access to my stuff. I wouldn't want. I was selfish, mean, and selfish. I didn't share my drugs. I didn't share my drugs, and I didn't share my alcohol. And the best way to not do that is just not be around anybody. But if it rained, that was the water that I needed in order to prepare the needles that I used. If I went into a bathroom, I would stick that needle right in the toilet and suck the water into it in order to get my fix. I didn't care. I needed to get it into me as quickly and as soon as possible, and I didn't care how that happened. I have a scar on my wrist. I almost lost this arm from dirty needle use. And my way of dealing with that, as I'm sitting there in the hospital and the doctor's telling me if I would have come in like even half a day later, I would have lost my arm because the infection had worked its way so far up my arm. And I cried about that sitting in the hospital. I cried like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. And my solution to that was just to use the other arm. It wasn't to stop. It wasn't to think about what was going to happen or anything like that, or maybe it's time to quit. Or no, my solution was just to use the other arm. I didn't think the day would ever come that I would stop drinking or stop drugging. I didn't know how to function without it. I didn't know how to, and I wanted to stop so bad. You'd not believe how bad I wanted to stop. I would get that feeling inside me. I would get that craving and I would cry because I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to use drugs. I didn't want to do any of that. I would swear, I don't, I'm not going to do this. And I would cry as I'm calling my dealer. I would cry as that knot would form in my stomach when the people would deliver the alcohol to me, when my drug dealer's car would appear around the corner. That knot in my stomach, and because I would start to feel that relief, and that relief would conflict with the fact that I didn't want to do this anymore. I didn't want to do this anymore. And as I'm injecting my drugs, I'm still crying. And as I'm guzzling down two bottles of beer in less than a minute, I'm still crying that I don't want to do this. But I didn't know what to do. I did not know how to stop any of this stuff. And I'm very glad that I got to that point, and that point for me was not, death. That I figured out that, it's 12 steps, 12 steps, 12th tradition, and a worldwide community of people that would help me. It started off just a city of people, but thanks to the pandemic, it's become a worldwide people, a group of people that have helped me keep going. And I can't believe that for the past 3 months, 6 months, I've forgotten about that. I've forgotten about all of you. I've forgotten about what it's like to pick up the phone and talk to somebody and feel that relief. I forgot about, it may not make me feel better in the moment, but in the long run, things will be okay. And even if they're not okay, that's still things being okay for me, because I'm still alive and I'm still going it, and I can appreciate all the positive things that are happening. So, I met that person that told me that everything that I needed and wanted was already way deep down inside of me. And as I said before, I found that that is true, but that was hard. That was hard to wake up every day and fight the cravings. And I learned after a while that it wasn't actually cravings that I was fighting, it was the obsessive thinking that was going on. It was the obsession in my mind that I was fighting on. Because a craving, I can't crave what's not there. And the drugs and alcohol left my body a long time ago. But it took about 2 years or so for that obsessive thinking to go away, for me to wake up and not have that, I need to have a drink, I need to have a drug. That didn't go away right away. I love listening to those people that talk about how that the obsession for the drinking and drug, how that just went away. Like they woke up one morning and it was gone. And I never, I had a thought about doing this again or doing that again, or, being in traditional meetings, how they talk about, and then the obsession was gone, and the sun came out, and they're running through the daisies and everything was great. And I want to just shoot them. Like, oh, well, good for you. And that's exactly the way that I would say it to people when they would say, I'd hear these stories about how things just went from night to day and everything. Well, good for you. I really don't care. because that's not the way it happened with me, and I don't give a crap about how it happened with you. I wish it was like that, but it wasn't. It was just like I used to cry about getting my drugs and this, that, just like I used to cry for that. The same thing happened. And I would cry my way through not picking up a drink, through not picking up a drug. Okay, so in 2017, I met my friend that told me that everything I needed was inside me. I met two Irish men. Both of them became very important in my recovery life as well. I had one. I was in this little program, and I gave a lot of attitude, and oh, it was just crazy, insane how much attitude I gave the world. And I never back down. You don't cross me. You don't piss me off. You don't anything like that. Because that's the way I had to beat it when I to survive on the streets. I was on the streets at Toronto for 5 years, and it was not fun. Oh, I could feel the cold deep inside me. But you had to survive, and you can't be a wimp. And I was in this program, and I was giving attitude to the counselor that was in there and whatever. And this little Irish man looked at me and said, "Would you just give yourself a chance for once in your life? Sit down, shut up, take that stupid hat off your head, and give yourself a chance for once in your life." Nobody talks to me like that. How dare you? I'd be planning the hit that I would be taking out on you if you ever talked to me like that. And he said that to me, and I opened up my mouth to say something to him, and what came out was, okay. And I sat down and I took my hat off and I gave myself a chance. And I have no idea why I listened to the people that I listened to when I came into the program. People are telling me things like, you have to go to this woman told me, go to f at minimum 4 meetings a week for the next 2 years and lay your foundation. And I thought, 4 meetings a week, minimum, for 2 years? Are you insane? You know how much time that is? I have no time. I have no time. What was I doing? I don't know what the hell I was doing. And as I got into the rooms, I heard 90 meetings in 90 days. And I thought, well, fuck, that's a lot better than 4 years, 4 meetings a week for 2 years. But even that was, I was too busy for that. Too busy for that. Too busy coming up with excuses why I don't want to be here is exactly what's going on. And I did that. In the beginning, I went to so many meetings. It was insane. I think I wound up going to 2 meetings a day. Remember, the first a couple years started off in person, 2 meetings a day for the longest time. And then when I got online, it just, that just became even, it just took off. Okay, so it was that little Irish man that told me to sit down or shut up. That was the first of the two. And the second was my first sponsor, who, when I met him, was about 44 years into re recovery at that time. And he would ask me, "When are you going to do the steps?" And I never understood what he meant by doing the steps. "When are you going to do the steps? When are you going to do the steps?" And I thought, oh. Okay, I was introduced to this program in 2003. I didn't get into recovery until 2017, and the reason was the God thing. The God thing. I'm not going to be in a program that I'm being forced to believe in God. I don't want to have anything to do with that. Even though I could hear things like, of your understanding and this, that, and whatever, I just couldn't get past it. And that was my biggest biggest excuse as to why I wasn't going to be in this program, right? The reality is, I wasn't ready, and then I didn't want to. And any excuse that I could find not to commit myself to this program is exactly what I did. But what it boils down to is that I wasn't ready and I didn't want to. Fortunately, my being ready wasn't death. So that man pulled up in my driveway one night, at 10:30 at night. And I say night because for him, because he was old. He was 45 years into the program. He was old. And he stayed awake one day to say to me, he called me outside, and he was sitting in the car, and he gave me a printout of the 12 steps and a black marker. And he said to do what it was he said that he said was to I'm going to help you remove this obstacle of yours. And I had to write it down because I think it's one of the most amazing things, right? He said, if you take the 12 steps and you take out all the references to God and spirituality, you'll be left with seven secular steps. So he said, keep the first step, get rid of steps two and three. So I used the black marker and I crossed them off, right? Take the word moral out of four and take the word God out of five. Get rid of step six and seven. Keep steps 8, 9, and 10, get rid of 11, and hold on to 12. And when you do that, you have seven secular steps. And I said, what? And he said, read what's left on that paper. And when you read it with all those things taken out of it, he said, that's how the program heals you. That's the work that you have to do. Put yourself together, take accountability for who you are, fix your relationships with other people. Keep an eye on yourself, watch what's going on, and help, and maybe you can help the next person that comes along. And I was sitting there and I was just astounded, and I was like, wow, that is just amazing. And so he turned to me and said, okay, I've just removed God from the situation. Now what the hell is your problem? Wow. I didn't have anything to say at that point. Right, because he did. He just took the whole God situation right out of it. So I continued to go to the meetings here, and I would go to those traditional meetings when I'd walk in, and they'd say, "Hey, Marsha, how you doing? You found God yet?" I wasn't looking for God, and now because of this man, the God thing has been removed from me. So now, And when they would tell me that I would have to get down on my knees, and pray, I said, no, I don't. I don't have to do that. And things became a lot better for me that point forward, like from that point moving on. I learned a lot of amazing things. I learned about the 12 principles that are behind the steps because I couldn't understand that damn big book. I don't know how anybody understood that book. And I think the book is I think it's necessary for everybody to read it. I used to argue about the book all the time, and then I locked myself in my closet. I think it was about a year into recovery, and I actually read the damn thing because I figured my arguments would get better with people if I actually read the book that I was arguing about. But I didn't want anybody to know that I was reading the book because and I locked myself in a closet and I read the damn thing. I think it's important that people do know the history of where this program came from and all that stuff, but your program is going to be your program, and if you want to believe in something, go ahead. If you have to kiss a purple elephant every day to stay clean, sober, whatever it is, then go ahead and do it. That's where I am right now. However you need to stay alive for one more day, please do that. Please do that, and don't let anything stand in the way of you accomplishing that. And you don't have to get down on your knees to do it. I used to, when one person said that to me, you used to get down on your knees. I reminded them that this is a program of change. And, I used to do a lot of really bad things in order to keep my habit going. And they said, you need to get down on your knees. And I looked at this man and I said, I don't, no, I don't get down on my knees anymore for that. I said, and you couldn't afford me if I did. So I suggest you get out of my face. I don't do that stuff anymore, mister. I realized that through this journey of recovery, I don't need to do the program the way they do. I don't even need to do the program the way you do. I need to not drink and I need to not die. Those are the two things. Those are the first two things, right? And then the rest will fall in place the way it works for me. Man, I've been talking a lot of crap already. And no, not crap. I've been talking my recovery journey. I've gone through a bunch of sponsors. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work. I have a people that I hang out with. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work, my recovery goes up and down, but the thing is that I'm sober. And for as much as I hate the word grateful, I'm grateful that I stuck around as long as I did. So what's happening with me now that I made this decision to come into the to take this time off work, and from a financial viewpoint, things went to hell in a handbasket. It was not good. But believe it or not, I'm actually starting to come out the other side. It didn't feel like that when I was going through it, and the bills were piling up, and people were calling asking, when the money was coming, and I got afraid to use my phone to answer my phone like I used to when I was in my when I was in my addiction. I didn't want to answer the phone because it was a bill collector or somebody like that, calling about something, or somebody that I screwed over trying to catch me, trying to find me. That's how it's felt the past little while. I started isolating beyond control. My mother would have to, knock on the door to come and see if I was alive. She'd call me because, don't bother me, don't anything like that. And I'd be curled up in this little ball, just crying my eyes out, feeling sorry for myself about how things are happening, and forgetting the fact that other people go through shit as well. They talk about, helping somebody else to get out of yourself. And I used to always think that that was some sort of fucking cop out, because if I'm not facing my problems, if I'm not, if all I'm doing is pushing my problems aside to help somebody else out for a little bit, and guess what? It's all going to come back. But what I'm starting to understand with that is, at least it gets me out of my own head for at least 5 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes. And maybe I'll be able to actually be a little source of comfort for the next person, for the person that I took the time out to say hello to answer the phone for, whatever it is, right? But I didn't remember all of that. And the past 6 months have really sucked. But there's been a few people in my tribe, some really persistent people. And when I say persistent, I mean so persistent. You're like that friggin' mosquito that just won't go away, right? You would call me and I wouldn't call you back, and you would continue to call me, and you would leave messages for me, and you would talk about how you cared about me, and just annoying, absolutely annoying. And I'm so happy that you guys did that, because if it weren't for you all, who knows what kind of a pit I would have fallen into. And you understood that I didn't want to talk to you. And you understood that I didn't want you to try and make me feel better. And that was okay. But you continued to be there, and you continued to be annoying. And you continued to remind me that I've been driving my BMW for way too long. And for those who don't mind, that stands for bitch, moan, and whine. And I've been driving that BMW for way too long, and it was time for me to park it. This program has, I'm choking up again. It's been incredible. And I'm going to wrap it up right now. I can't believe I've been talking for so long, and say, if you're new and in the program, just keep coming. Find yourself a tribe of annoying people that will remind you how amazing you are. And one day you will realize how amazing you are. And I'm not going to drink, and I'm not going to die. And yeah, I'm gonna leave it at that. Just keep coming back. This program is so worth it, and one day you'll realize that you're worth it. Today I know that I am. So keep your head out of your butt, family. Keep doing the next right thing. Thank you. Thanks, Jan.